Chapter 12. Masterless Apprentice. Kairos stared into the bluish glow lighting the lantern on his desk. It was a gentle, pleasing light, soothing and comforting, despite its otherworldliness. He had been practicing at length, hours a night, and had made progress in modifying the light to suit his desire. A bit of a change of inflection and he could adjust the brightness or the hue. Subtle changes to the way he moved his fingers could make it last longer or shorter, how close to him it formed, and whether it would stay fixed in space or follow an object as if attached to it. He was feeling rather proficient at it. Everything seemed familiar once he tried it, and it came almost naturally to him. Regarding his latest experiment, he scribbled some notes about how he had managed to light the lantern just so. He had already managed to get it in shades of white, yellow, and orange. Blue was the first one he had tried that had made it a color that he had never seen in a fireplace. As he finished his notations, he let his senses drift into that other place where the ether was visible and mentally tugged at the light. It went dark, as if a candle had been blown out. He had been quite relieved to discover that trick, since as he performed the ritual more and more precisely, it tended to last much longer of its own accord. The previous night he had left one aglow to see how long it might last, and had fallen asleep before it so much as dimmed. It had been unchanged in the morning, and he had felt better snuffing it out lest anyone discover it, preferring caution over curiosity. Still, one day, he ought to figure out the limits of this magic, and to do so would require some place more discreet than a scrivener's shop on a city street. By the light of a normal lamp, Kairos gathered up his night's notes in a neat pile and set them in a drawer, along with notes from his previous few nights' work. Sooner or later, he thought, he would have to get them bound up, lest they become disorderly. A whole new world was opening up to him, he could feel, and he did not want to miss any part of it. Kairos went to bed determined to peer into that other world he saw so often, but remembered so little from. Things had been getting easier to recall, though, the more he practiced with the lights. Something familiar to that world was making the connections to the rest that much easier. There were things there he wanted to see, to learn, to understand. There was more to magic than simple tricks of light, that he was certain of. It would be akin to learning a new language by watching children play, haphazard, unfocused, and never certain of a correct example, but until he discovered a better way, he would watch and study. If he were to dream instead of Abelay, that would not be so bad either. Alas, he saw naught but the same magical world, same as ever. The morning's work seemed interminable. Kairos scribbled his way through one page after another of the new bylaws passed by the Shipping Guild. He had finished two copies already and was midway through a third. Eight had been commissioned by expert Heron, enough copies to allow each of his shipping masters to keep a copy. While he appreciated that expert Heron had gone the traditional route rather than bring such a repetitive task to the typesetters who specialized in such jobs, he was growing weary of it. The saving grace was that the shippers were not going to be as picky about the niceties of penmanship as some of Kairos's other clients. They just wanted accurate, legible copies of the document distributed among their membership. And Kairos was in a rush. He had woken up with a fresh memory of another bit of magic to try. He had seen and heard it quite clearly, across from a campfire, an incantation to lift and move small objects about. Haru, Bidesi, Lioki, Quaturan, Gelora. That was how it went, and the one who spoke these nonsensical words had also gestured at the same time. He had started with his hands out at his sides, then brought them together as if to clasp them, but at the last moment turned and lifted them instead, and the subject of his spell lifted off the ground a foot or so. After that, he had seemed to be able to control the movement of the objects. In this particular case, the remnants of the campfire-cooked dinner. But Kairos could not see how he had managed that. He could not wait to try and to figure it out. As Kairos's hand flew across the pages of the shipper's bylaws, he could not help but notice that there were things written within it that he likely should not know. There were all the usual mundane procedural rules and whatnot, but couched within the otherwise trite old standbys were a number of rules they had set up, whereby they regulated the trade of the city and much of the kingdom. There were rates set within it that could not be undercut by any of the members, though they were free to charge more should they be able to get more money from a customer, keeping the prices higher than if they were at each other's throats for business. There were lists of contraband items that could not be transported, but there were also notable listed exceptions for those with certain paperwork, signed by the proper officials, and who those officials were. There were lists of nations and their various tariffs, and brief lists of what they considered contraband in their own lands. It listed what nations were lax about enforcing these restrictions, and which were not. There was a notation about two nations, the Empire of Sakqual and the island kingdom of Silk Waves, which only allowed their people to travel under certain restriction and with official permission. All told, it was not just the rules of the tradesmen, but an insight, albeit a commercial and nautical one, into the wider world beyond Acardia. As the day wore on, Kairos scribbled away relentlessly to get through the shipper's commission. He was making more mistakes than usual, he knew, and was probably making it take longer than if he slowed down and did a more careful job. But he was unable to contain his excitement. He crumpled yet another sheet, walked across the room to the stove, and tossed it into the fire. When he finally penned the last line of the last letter of the last sheet of the last copy of the shipper's bylaws, Kairos let out a deep sigh. He would take them to the binder in the morning, a simple, inelegant job, just enough to hold the sheets together. But for now, he was done. He set aside the 8 stacks of paper and opened the drawer that contained his latest notes from his dreams. He gathered them up and took a quick stop in the kitchen. He opened a drawer containing various culinary implements and selected a single spoon. Satisfied, he headed up to his bedroom, notes and spoon in hand. Ash, not usually the curious type, nevertheless followed him up the stairs, padding along silently behind. Kairos laid his notes out on the little desk by the bedside and sat down in the small, worn wooden chair. Scratched out hastily in the foggy after effects of slumber, the notes were something of a puzzle in and of themselves. The first part of Kairos's experimentation would be deciphering his own notes. Normally, if he had jotted something down in haste, he would have taken clues from the context to help him unravel the meaning of the words and identify wayward and misbegotten letters. These notes were different, though. They included a lot of nonsense, and intentionally so. The words Kairos needed to remember were words that were not spoken in Acardia, or any part of Tellurac that he was aware of, and he suspected they might not be spoken in any land he had ever heard of. Kairos eventually decided that he would have to rewrite his notes as he went along. After some time and a trip back downstairs to retrieve a quill, ink, and more paper, he set about trying to figure out the mysteries of the universe. He took a deep breath to calm himself, then went over and closed and shuttered the windows. He was left with only the light of a single candle on the desk. He sat down and blew the candle out, and the room was suddenly pitch dark. Aleph Kalai Abdu. A warm yellow glow lighted the room, as if a cheery fire shone in a hearth, except this light did not flicker as would a fire, cheery or otherwise. It lit the room fully and effectively, banishing shadows from all but the farthest reaches under the bed, and certainly removing from the ambiance any hint of the creepy, macabre, or occult, or so Kairos hoped. There was still some part of him that rebelled against the possibility that this was actually happening, that he was not actually tapping into forces of unknown origin and moral character. A brightly lit room to work in made it seem more scientific, like being a chemist or an astronomer. No, wait, that does not work at all. They work nearly exclusively in darkness. No matter, Kairos had felt the rush of cool ether invigorating his mind as a reminder that he knew this power and had already plumbed its shallowest waters. It was time to test somewhat deeper waters.
Baru Bidoesi Leokul Quatuan Gelana.
Kairos remembered the accompanying gesture much more clearly than the gibberish the magician in his dreams had spouted, and thus swept his hands inward and then upward. Nothing happened. Kairos had some small hope within him that it would have worked on the first try, but he was not so fortunate. He squinted back down at his notes and tried to figure out where he had guessed wrong at his own writing. He tried also to remember from his dream how everything had sounded, felt, looked as the spell came together.
Baru Bideisi Leokul Quatuan Gelana.
Still nothing. Perhaps that first B was supposed to have been an N?
Naru Bideisi Leokul Quatuan Gelana.
Again, there was no result. But Kairos was not easily deterred. He pored over the letters and phrases, trying to see how his half-sleeping self had been forming letters by comparing them to words he could figure out. Several more attempts later, and
Haru Bidesi Leoki Quatuan Gelora.
Success! The spoon on the desk lifted to chin height and hung there, suspended by ether. In his dream, it appeared that there was nothing holding up the plates and pans his unwitting mentor had levitated. But here in the waking world, Kairos could feel and see the ether as it supported the spoon, with wisp-like tendrils of the magic stuff tethering it to him. Kairos stared at it in wonder. After the initial mesmerizing effects of his newfound magic passed, Kairos reached out and gently touched the spoon. It drifted away from his finger as if it were a toy boat on a still pond. The magic seemed to be holding it somewhere level in the air at a constant height, but did not prevent it from floating about. Kairos gave it a bit harder push, and could not help giggling as it bounced off the wall and ricocheted awkwardly back in his general direction. Kairos caught the spoon as it returned, and steadied it in the air, leaving his hand beneath it. He reached his mind back into the ether and sucked in what was wrapped around the spoon. Just as it did with the lights, removing the ether ended the magical effect. The spoon dropped smartly into the palm of his hand. He clenched it in a fist.
Ha! I'm getting good at this!
Kairos beamed. Ash, unnoticed on the bed behind him, could not disagree. Kairos turned the spoon over in his hand and examined it. It seemed unharmed. The wispy tendrils of ether had left no trace on the spoon, neither of physical nor an ethereal nature, as best as his knowledge of ether allowed. Kairos set the spoon back down gently on the desk and repeated the incantation. It lifted off the desk, same as before. Kairos reached for his quill and a fresh sheet of paper and began writing out the spell properly. He noted the inflection of each syllable he had used and began to write out a detailed description of the gesture, but stopped short. He intended to experiment with the subtleties of the spoken component of the incantation, as well as the motions, and a lengthy longhand accounting was going to be cumbersome. He needed some quicker symbology for his work. Kairos paused a moment to think of what he should start out with. He held no illusion of coming up with a perfect solution straight away. He expected that he would refine his methodology, and that it would improve along with his newfound mystical talents. He began to draw a pair of hands, held apart, just as they would be when the spellcasting began. However, he noticed a problem almost immediately. Despite his extensive expertise at writing, he was no artist. The blotchy little squiggles that appeared on the paper more resembled a glove, discarded and trodden into ill repair in the gutter of a thoroughfare, than a human hand. His sense of perspective was awful, and the fingers were uneven, differing in length and thickness, with no anatomical analog to where they seemed to bend. Despite several attempts, he saw no way that an uninformed observer would ever decipher what motions he was trying to portray. Slightly discouraged, Kairos decided to have a little fun.
Aru, Bidesi, Leoki, Quatuan, Gelora.
He levitated the pages that held his poor attempts at documentation, lifting them as easily as he had the spoon. They began to drift slightly, as even his breath was enough to set them adrift. But he reached out and steadied them a bit. Then, reaching into the ether, he drew some of the magic essence into himself. Not using it for any spell, he just refocused it on the paper. Remembering the heat such an action produced, he was unsurprised when, before long, the paper smoldered then caught fire. He watched the ether around the paper lose its grip as paper turned to ash, and ash sprinkled to the ground, cut loose from the bit still unburnt. Eventually, there was nothing left unburnt, and the ether no longer held anything at all. Brushing aside the need to figure out how best to document his research, Kairos figured on spending the rest of the evening playing and practicing. There would be time to be a scientist and wizard later. He might well wake up the next morning and find that his powers had disappeared as swiftly as they had been discovered, or so he told himself. He ought to enjoy it a bit at least. Kairos tossed the spoon in the air, quickly repeating the incantation.
Haru, Bidesi, Lioki, Quatuan, Gelora.
He lifted his palms and finished the spell just before the spoon touched the floor. With the spoon hovering a handspan above the floorboards, he slowly continued to raise his hands, trying to get the spoon to rise higher. The spoon did a fair impression of his own movement, moving up as fast as he moved his hands, just as he had hoped. Kairos extended his arms fully above his head, then got up on his toes. The spoon was nearly waist high. Kairos lowered his hands again and was able to set the spoon down on the floor. He repeated this game a few more times, finding that he could move it not only up and down, but to the side as well. He kept at it for longer than he had meant to, and was interrupted by his light abruptly winking out of existence.
Aleph Kalai Abdu,
and a quick circle with his fingers, hardly given any thought, turned the room to near daylight again.
"Hmm," muttered Kairos. "Maybe that one would be better to start with."
With that, he sat down at the desk again and attempted to write out the spell. Startled by the sudden disappearance and reappearance of the light, Ash sneaked across the room and up into Kairos' lap, seeking comfort.
"Well, hello there, old boy. Did not like that little eclipse, did you?"
Kairos reached down absentmindedly to pet Ash and noticed something unusual. While he was aware that his own body gave off ether, he was just noticing how much ash emitted. It was considerably more than Kairos had seen other people produce, even more so if one were to consider the size of this much smaller body. Kairos had surreptitiously watched passers-by to see what they and so many other things looked like in the ether. A lack of perspective prevented him from getting a good sense of his own source's output of the stuff. He could not help but wonder if the fairy tales, with their talk of witches' familiars and keeping cats, did not hold some element of truth behind them. He could easily see how keeping such a strong source of ether around could be useful. It would be like a farmer working the most arable land available, or brigands lying in wait on the most lucrative trade routes. Still pondering this new revelation, Kairos began jotting down his trusty light spell on the paper in front of him. As Kairos tore his gaze from the lazy miasma of ether wafting out of the cat in his lap, he decided to have another stab at notating spell gestures. He blinked at the paper in front of him, though, not immediately recognizing what he had just written. There were strange, otherworldly symbols on the page that he did not quite recall meaning to write. They were in no language he had ever written, and yet he knew quite well what they said. Aleph, Kelai, Abdu, with unique symbols that conveyed not only the sounds, but pitch, inflection, and relative quickness of each syllable. Intermixed were other symbols that had no pronunciation. These were the notations that described, in quite adequate detail, the motions that were required for the spell. Kairos' hand had done it nearly of its own accord, as if it were so rote an activity as writing his own signature. Kairos was a scribe, and long years of practice had long since dissociated the thought of writing from the act of writing. A word existed in his mind, and when he willed it to the paper, his hand knew what to do,
He did not concern himself over what strokes of the quill went into making a Q or an F. He had progressed past the stage of having to consciously worry about those minor details long ago. If he was copying something, he almost did not need to think at all. His eyes would see the words, and his hand would repeat them. This, though, was new. Not only had he not really thought specifically about what he was writing, he wrote something he had never seen before. That was puzzling. Even more puzzling was that it was so easy for him to understand its meaning. Slowly and deliberately, Kairos lifted his quill. Staring suspiciously at the strange text he had written, he attempted to duplicate it just below where he had penned the original. His hand effortlessly went through a series of sweeps and scratches, neatly and professionally. While there were several lines to each symbol he wrote, there was a certain order that just made sense, a flow to the quill strokes that seemed well thought out. Kairos was certain he had done this before. There was no way this was the first time he had used this script, written these symbols, practiced writing out that spell. Somewhere in his memory, memories of dreams long since consciously forgotten, he had done this before. And by the ease with which it came to him, he had done it a lot. The action was rote, unthinking, and easy. Much the way he could knot the laces of his own shoes, his hands knew better what to do than did his mind. Initially, the thought of a repository of knowledge, contents unknown and cached away deep in the hidden nooks of his own brain, disturbed Kairos. But as he pondered it further, he realized that he was not entirely guessing at this whole business. Some part of him, at some level, knew what it was doing, what he was doing. Somewhere, sometime, whether his dreams were real or a prophetic delusion come true, he knew what he was doing. Kairos had long enjoyed the diversion his dreams offered, but it was the first time he had realized he may have been getting an education all his life as he slept. The hour had drawn late, and Kairos experimented and pondered, and he was beginning to notice that his eyes had started to ache and burn with fatigue. He slumped back in his chair and blinked hard a few times, and tried to rub the fatigue out of them with his fingers. He did not want to sleep. There was too much new and exciting to discover. Pushing back his chair, he disturbed an anxious but uncomfortable Ash, who had been quite content to curl up in Kairos's lap as he worked. Jumping to the floor as the lap he had occupied disappeared from beneath him, the cat followed Kairos as he headed downstairs to put on a kettle of tea. Kairos's steps were a bit heavy and clumsy as he fought back the urge to curl up in his nice soft bed and give up on wizardry for the night. Ash kept back a bit, out of prudence, lest he be stepped on. Outside the bedroom, night had claimed the rest of the residence. Kairos had been up and down these stairs thousands of times, though, and was not concerned, darkness and fatigue hardly registering. Nevertheless, he would need light to make tea by. Aleph Kalai Abdu, and most of the ground floor was lit. The tiny rush of ether was refreshing, and Kairos paused just long enough to consider whether keeping up those little rushes of exhilaration would be enough to keep him awake. He continued down the stairs, shaking his head.
No, I need a good strong tea. At least I know how that works.
Kairos poured a kettle of water and dropped in the tea leaves, a mix of exotic herbs that Abile had introduced him to at a little shop across town. It was a bitter drink, but it had a really invigorating quality to it. It was imported from faraway Krang, where tea brewing was supposedly elevated to an art form, with most respectable citizens having their own personal blend of leaves and spices. The stove was cold, and Kairos had little patience to start a fire. He held the kettle at arm's length by its wooden handle and began diverting ether into it, slowly at first, and ever quicker as he got a feel for it. Kairos brought the kettle to a whistling boil in mere moments. Kairos set it atop the stove for a few minutes to let the tea steep, then poured himself a cup. The aroma of plants that Kairos would probably never see in his lifetime filled the room. The sharp, bitter flavor of the first sip he took quickly began clearing his head, first with the hot, steamy vapors, then with a burst of something contained within the mysterious mixture. Kairos had never met a Krangan, but he was sure the one who had concocted his tea was a genius. Kairos felt focused and alert by the time he finished the cup, though there was a strange, almost disembodied ache throughout him. Fatigue he was now able to set aside and ignore for a while. Kairos walked over to the stove to pour himself another cup to bring upstairs with him as he continued his work, when he caught sight of his work desk. On the corner, stacked neatly, were his pages for the shipper's bylaws. The original was set next to them separately. Kairos had been almost interested enough to make himself a ninth copy earlier in the day. Perhaps he had another diversion to keep his spell practice interesting. He took his second cup of the Krangan tea, walked over to his desk, and sat down. Picking up the 8 commissioned copies, he set them aside, away from the inkpot and where he intended to try his next experiment. It was far too likely for some small thing to go wrong, and he did not want to have to redo an entire day's work, or research how to remove ink from paper magically. Kairos set up a fresh sheet of paper in front of him, alongside the original copy. The original was little more than a set of notes, not needed beyond Kairos's use of them. And if something were to happen to them, it could be explained away at least. Kairos selected a quill and uncovered his inkwell. Aru, Bidesi, Lioki, Quaturan, Gilora. The quill lifted gently off the desk. Kairos moved his hand slightly, willing the quill to follow his motion, and ponderously guided it through the air and dipped the tip into the ink. He pulled it out again, even managing to gently wipe the excess ink from the tip. He brought it over to the page and began painstakingly crafting letters on the blank whiteness of the paper. Kairos held his hand crooked as if it actually held the quill, rather than it being a hand's breadth away and suspended in midair by an ether that only he, as far as he knew, was able to see. He took his hand through the same motions he would normally use to write, though much more slowly, still unsure of how well the quill and the magic would be able to keep up with him. Letter by letter, though, word by word, page by page, Kairos sped his hand, and the quill kept pace. Kairos had not paid so close attention to the actual mechanics of his profession in a long time. He was exaggerating his movements, going through them as technically soundly as he knew in his head they should be. He was aware that his hand had long practice and its own ideas how letters ought to be written, but he was more keenly aware of the quill this time than he was aware of his hand's daily activity, and as a result, he was working his hand in ways it was unused to. Halfway through finishing his personal copy of the bylaws, his hand cramped up suddenly. The quill kept going. Forgetting the pain in his cramped hand, Kairos watched in fascination as the quill ignored the movements of his hand,
now clenched nearly shut in a spasm,
and finished the word he had been in the middle of. Kairos grinned, working his left hand against the knotted muscle in his right to ease the cramp, and concentrated not on the movements of his hand, but on the movements the quill should take. It was awkward at first, and the writing not so crisp and clear as when he had used his own writing as a mental model for the quill to mimic. But he picked right back up where he left off. Faster and faster, Kairos pushed the quill to see how quickly it could follow his thoughts, and indeed it was quick. Words flew down onto the paper. Trips to the inkpot and back left tiny trails of ink flecks, and Kairos cared little. Letters were formed haphazardly as the quill was often at a poor angle to write, but Kairos chalked it up to something he would get better at with more practice. Within a short time of realizing his hand was not needed to guide the quill, Kairos had finished the extra copy of the shipper's bylaws. Kairos's very own copy of the Worldwise Men's View of Life Beyond Acardia, and how to exploit it for profit, was now set out in front of him. Kairos was giddy. He poured another cup of his new favorite tea and thought about what he should try next. He noticed his hands were trembling with fatigue as he poured, though. He noticed also that his head was feeling heavy and a bit fuzzy. While he might possess magic, The tea was merely an extraordinary concoction of the mundane, and he had discovered its limits. Finally giving in to practicality and the needs of the clumsy vessel that carried around his brain, Kairos set aside his cup of tea unfinished and headed up the stairs. Ash, who'd had enough of magical shenanigans with the lights, chose to remain below and curl up atop the stove with a still warm kettle. As Kairos ended the light spell illuminating the work area, Ash yawned and quickly went to sleep. Kairos collapsed into his bed, fully clothed. He ached throughout his body and mind, but it was the exhausted ache of a victorious gladiator. His battle had been fought and won, and he now needed rest before he would be ready to begin anew. He had turned lights on and off, made tea, and written a set of guild rules rather poorly, but he had done it with magic. He felt like one of the mighty wizards of the fairy tales.